Part 1. That the Sons of Gods May Bleed. Chapter 1. Malaghurst. The sons of Horus bore their father bleeding to his throne. Ghosts followed them, howling from the shadows as the blood shook from their armor. There were four sons. Kyber, the black of his plates, glossed with gore. Horus Aximand, his flayed face pale, eyes fixed on the red maw, grinning from his war master's side, the armor still rent and smoking. Tormageddon, glittering with ghostlight, silent as smoke. And Malaghurst, who followed them, gasping into his breath mask, limping with twisted limbs. The Justerin thundered in their wake. Black Terminator armor glinted wetly with blood in the stuttering alarm lights.
Sire!
Called Aximand, grunting the word through the effort of lifting the Warmaster.
Sire! Can you hear us?
Horus's mouth was a crack in the pale mask of his face. The fur and velvet of his cloak dragged on the floor, holed and charred, smearing onto the deck in his wake. Malaghurst tasted warm iron, sulphur and honey through his mask. Horus's head shook. The wound in his side opened wider, the armor crumpling like skin around a sneering mouth.
Sire!
Called Aximand. A human in the red and black robes of a senior bonded officer emerged from a junction as they passed. The bronze data slate in the man's hands fell to the floor as he knelt, but Malaghurst saw the human's eyes touch the Warmaster before he pressed his forehead to the floor. Malaghurst turned aside and kicked. Pain lanced through his back as the servos in his armor snapped his leg straight. The human flew backwards, his head a crumpled ruin of meat and shattered bone. Malaghurst let out a grunt of discomfort.
What?
Began Aximand.
Aesor,
growled Malaghurst, and staggered after the others.
Justerin,
called Kyber, his voice booming over the vox as he moved.
Kill order. Command deck. Passages 95 through 200. No survivors.
The Terminators peeled away. Gunfire echoed down tunnels. Muzzle flare flashed from passage openings as they passed. Screams rose and were silenced.
The tide shift,
hissed Tormageddon, as he loped with fluid grace beneath the Warmaster's weight.
He is...
Silence!
Shouted Malaghurst, the words shaking with rage. The demon vessel hissed in reply. They reached the throne room. The doors opened at their approach. Starlight and flame diluted the darkness beyond. At the far end, the throne loomed before the open eye of a viewport. They hurried across the dark expanse. Blood scattered to the floor behind them, smoking as it touched air. The bowls of burning oil hanging from the ceiling guttered. Shadows grew in their wake. Ethereal cries rose through the dark as more blood fell to the deck.
Seal the doors!
Shouted Malaghurst to the two Justerin who had followed them.
No one enters! No one!
They set the Warmaster down at the foot of the throne.
We must get the apothecaries,
said Aximand. The great chair of basalt and black iron rose above them.
This is beyond them,
snarled Malaghurst.
What is happening to him?
Asked Aximand, looking at the still figure of Tormageddon, standing a step back from the others. The demon host shook its head once, slowly.
I cannot look at him. The warp is broken edges and crow calls.
We must...
began Kyber.
My throne,
whispered Horus. And for a second his four sons froze.
My father...
None of them moved. A drop of blood slid from the lips of the wound in the Warmaster's side and struck the floor as a puff of ash. Kyber turned his head and looked at Malaghurst.
Get him to the throne!
Roared Malaghurst. He could feel it now, itching on the edge of his sight and at the back of his eyes. The warp was flowing around them, twisting tight like threads spinning into rope. Their feet rang on the steps to the throne. Beyond the viewport, Malaghurst could see the lights of Beta Garmon's star burning like a cooling coal as it fell into the distance. Ice was forming on the crystal panes, spidering across the starlight. With growls of effort, Horus's four sons lifted him onto the seat of his throne.
Step back,
hissed Malachurst. Blood ran from the War Master's side, pooling and trickling onto the plinth in a black, smoking stream. For a second, nothing else moved. Horus's eyes were open, but if they saw anything, they fixed on nothing.
What?
Began Kyber once more. A single metal claw scraped on the right arm of the throne. The four sons were utterly still. The flow of blood from the wound had slowed to a dripping ooze. A breath hissed from Horus's lips. His hand gripped the arm. Blades dug into black stone. Horus raised his head, eyes closing briefly, pale lips opening. His image was flickering, blurring into shadow and out of being. Malachurst stepped forwards. The War Master's eyes opened. Malachurst felt the gaze touch him. A wave of heat rolled over him, and for a second he felt his body freeze, felt his flesh blast apart and scatter to the edge of time, felt his soul become a scream stretched to the edge of existence. The image of the War Master shimmered, then settled.
It is all right, Mal, said Horus.
The four sons of Horus knelt. The buzzing of their active armor throbbed in the quiet. Malachurst felt his breath wheeze into his mask and allowed a measure of relief into his thoughts. Horus took a long, slow breath. The wound in his side had closed. All that remained was a narrow line on his armor, still wet with blood. The low moaning that had itched at the edge of Malachurst's awareness quieted.
Sire,
said Axemand.
What is our position and strength? Said Horus.
His face was still pale, but the shadows were flowing into the recesses of his face, hardening its lines.
The vanguard fleet is with us,
said Axemand, still watching his Primarch unblinkingly.
Legion battle fleets, Acheron, Styx, and Charon remain in system, along with the vassal groups Wellum, Catullus, Nero Delta, Malik, Deuteron, and Noctis. Engagements continue, but we have dominance. The gate of Beta Garmon is open.
Yet you pulled the vanguard away, said Horus.
Sire, you...
I know, little Horus, said the War Master. His eyelids closed briefly.
I know. You did well, my sons.
Beta Garmon had eaten their strength for months, grinding down armor and gorging on bodies and bullets. The forces still loyal to the Emperor had fought with a ferocity and strength that had spilled more blood in that one system than had been shed in the last 5 years of the Great Crusade. There had been no choice, though, not for the Emperor's forces and not for the War Master. Beta Garmon was the gate to the Segmentum Solar. Charted warp routes converged and expanded from the system like the threads of a web. Through it, fleets of ships could run into the reaches of stars around Terra. It was not the only gate to the solar domain, but it was the only one that mattered. At last, the deadlock had broken. Horus had taken to the field. With him was a spear tip of the Legion's finest. Darkness and fire had followed them, as though they were the shadow cast by the War Master's presence. Malachurst had remained, as he did so often now, with the vengeful spirit, and the endless balances of power, now both occult and temporal, that allowed the wheels of Horus's war machine to turn. He had not needed to see his lord walk amongst the slaughter, nor see those who faced him fall. And all had happened as had been ordained. Their enemies had fallen, and the battle, so long unresolved, had swung. Until Horus, striding through ashes and blood, the god of the empire he would win by war, had fallen. Fallen without a blow being taken. And his sons had taken him, as they had once before, bleeding from the battlefield. Malachurst was the first to raise his head to look at the enthroned War Master. A high, keening pain filled his skull. His eyes tried to focus. He felt blood on his teeth. He dropped his gaze. The pain dimmed, but did not vanish.
Sire, what is your will? Time,
Horus rasped. And Malachurst felt the pain that it cost his war master to speak.
Time has run too far. Send for them. We must gather before...
Horus's eyes closed, agony radiating from him like heat from a suddenly blazing fire. Malachurst clamped his teeth shut. Bubbles of migraine colour foamed across his vision. Horus was unmoving on his throne. Shadows flickered across the walls and floor of the throne room, as though light were shining from the War Master. But there was no light. Malachurst forced himself to stand. He tried to raise his head, but could not. Aximand was already on his feet, backing away. Tormageddon was shimmering, the substance of its body dissolving and reforming like a grainy picked image. Kyber remained kneeling at the foot of the throne, his fingers digging into the stone to hold himself in place.
Go,
said Horus, his voice sounding as though it were carried from far away.
Summon them. My brothers. Sire,
said Malachurst, his voice shuddering as tidal waves of pain battered through him.
Eleanor, said Horus. Eleanor.
And then he was silent, his eyes shut, the shadows stilled, and the War Master sat, bleeding and pale, on his throne. Lyak. Screams cloaked the Trisaion as it rode the tides of the warp. 32,768 humans hung from nails driven into the outside of its hull. All of them had been alive when the ship had passed from the cold of real space into the embrace of the realm of gods. They were still alive now, after a fashion. Their deaths stretched into an eternal cacophony of suffering. Demons swarmed over them, clinging to the hull, lapping agony and delirium from the humans as their souls and bodies were torn apart. Seen from above, the Trisaion's spearblade hull seemed to wear a shifting skin of chitin and wet flesh. Torch towers burned above it, red flames billowing in slow rhythm with the screams of torment and the cries of the feeding demons.
Beauty,
whispered the voice in Lyak's skull.
Truth.
He nodded.
Glory to the Eternal Four, for they are all, he said aloud, continuing the litany that had been speaking without pause since the Trisaion breached the veil into the sacred realm. Glory to the Eightfold Truth, for it is eternal. Glory to the First Circle of Servants, for they are most high.
He sat at the centre of a black glass floor, before the crystal window of the tower's viewport. The smoke of burning incense breathed around him from censers swung by eight shrouded figures. Beneath their robes, each of the supplicants was a riot of mutated and mortified flesh. But in the presence of the Crimson Apostle, they hid their blessings. All of them had sacrificed their sight and hearing to serve him. To attend Zardu Lyak, first chaplain of the Unspeaking, the one who is both revelation and sacrifice, was a blessing beyond imagining. To see his unmasked face and hear his private words would be beyond their souls to bear. Further back, beside the single door out of the tower sanctum, stood two hunched figures. Red velvet swathed them from head to foot and spilled onto the floor around them. They did not move, but a candle made of human fat, blood, and bone ash hung in the air before each one. Sigils marked the black tallow, weeping clear tears onto the floor beneath the shrouded giants.
He approaches,
he thought, and knew it to be true, even as the thought whispered through him. He rose from where he sat. He wore no robe or armour. In these moments of contemplation, Lyak always chose to remember that he was flesh. Smooth muscle flowed as he stood. Branded words covered his skin from neck to toes. 512 languages marked him. All were from cultures that had been dead for thousands of years, some human, some alien. Lyak spoke every one. He brought his hands up to his face, covering his eyes for a second.
Ushnakathal, he said.
He felt the call hiss into the sacred realm and heard an answer. Gossamer figures of black smoke congealed around him, indistinct, like sketches painted on parchment with water and ink. The shadows of faces formed in the coiling throng, screaming with silent agony, spitting hate, weeping. Whispers filled his mind.
Who are you? I do not want to die.
Who are you?
Oh, please have mercy.
Who are you?
Betrayer of oaths.
Who are you?
You are defiler of all that once you held sacred.
Who are you?
Why are you doing this?
Uskathed, he commanded. The smoke figures reached out with ghostly fingers. Their touch slid over his skin. Ice-cold fire burned through his flesh.
We know you, nameless one,
hissed the voices in his skull.
We remember. The dead remember.
Lyak held his mouth shut. The agony was a supernova at the core of his being. It felt like burning, like iron nails being hammered into bone. It felt like rebirth and revelation. Armor formed over his skin, the shape of ceramite plates, of pauldrons and gauntlets, wove into existence as the shades wrapped him. Circuitry and fiber bundles came into being and meshed with his nerves. At last he stood, clad in grey, the ashen plates of his armor covering all but his head.
Yes, nay, he spoke.
The shades faded, hissing hate and spite as they slid back out into the infinity of the sacred realm. The blessed agony he had endured faded from his flesh, and he bowed his head in thanks for its blessing. Last of all, he turned and stepped to the side of the room, where his mask helm looked down from his weapons rack. Its face snarled at him with frozen rage. Twin rows of three eyes ran down the bronze cheeks, each eye burning like a furnace coal. Its mouth was a wide pit of sharp silver. Two shards of obsidian rose in horns from its brows. It had been a gift from the first of the Gal Vorbach, and he wore it always, except in brief moments of solitary contemplation. Lyak reached out and took it, feeling its malice tingle with the taste of blood on his tongue. Carefully, he settled the mask helm over his head. The hooks of its inner face bit into his cheeks. The breather pipes connected with his armor of their own accord. Incense-laced smoke filled his next breath. Whirls of Colchisian runes spun in his eyes. Colors and dimensions that mortals could not see repainted the room around him.
He is here, came the thought.
He turned and knelt as the doors into the tower sanctuary opened. The red-swathed figures turned, their shrouds rippling as they knelt. The robed supplicants could neither hear the door opening nor see who stepped through, but the presence of that being was enough to send them falling prostrate. Lorgar Aurelian stood upon the threshold for a moment. His skin was dusted with golden powder, his cheeks and scalp painted with vertical lines of cuneiform. Crimson robes hung over his unarmored flesh. But for his size, he would have looked like a priest from the dust planet that had raised him. Presence radiated from him. This was not the rage that had haloed the now exalted Prince of Blood, or the raw etheric power of Magnus. To stand close to Lorgar Aurelian was to want to hear him speak, to feel deep emotions stir at his smallest gesture, to feel one's soul both cower and exult. Except that Lyak felt nothing, just the hooks on the mask he wore cutting his face.
"Your beatitude,"
he said.
"Rise, my son," said Lorgar. "I ask your forgiveness for disturbing your observance."
"Where you walk, truth and transcendence follow," said Layak. "To receive you in this moment is to exchange a holy task for one greater."
Lorgar bowed his head in acknowledgement, eyelids closing briefly.
"In 2 hours we will emerge at the edge of Beta Garmon, and there we will find the War Master.
Messages fly by the lips of the God-Maid to my other brothers.
He calls us together,
to stand together one last time, as we once did at the feet of our father."
Lorgar paused, then walked to the crystal viewport, through which the nausea light of the warp danced. For a second, Lyak wondered what the eyes of his Primarch saw. The sacred realm was a mirror to souls, and what it showed was different to every mind that dared look upon it. Lyak only saw the ghosts when he looked at the warp. He had long ago given up wondering why.
"We answer the War Master's summons and are blessed to do so," said Lyak.
"No," said Lorgar. "The message has not yet reached us and will not arrive until after we are already at Horus's side. That does not matter, nor is it why we go.
We enter the crucible, my son. From here the outcome of all will follow.
Time and destiny draw to a point, and the wheel of the universe waits to turn around it. This has been revealed. It is written in the voices of the storm and the blood of the dying. The fate of all is waiting to be born. Divine victory lies before us. Before all humanity."
Lorgar turned his gaze on Lyak. Reflections of screaming ghosts danced in his eyes.
"Do you understand?"
Lyak bowed his head at the words, feeling his thoughts shake.
"Most sacred lord, how may I serve?"
Lorgar turned away again, and Lyak felt the fire glow of his Primarch cool, as though it had been cast into shadow.
"I hear the music of eternity, my son. Horus."
He said the name slowly.
"Something is happening to Horus."
Volk.
"Commander, the flight is clear to begin final launch preparations."
Volk did not answer the human serf. The words that the man spoke were a formality that he knew so well, their rhythms were like the beating of his hearts. He kept his gaze on the machine that lay on the rock-crete apron in front of him. Its burnished metal skin gleamed in the red glow of the hangar cavern. Yellow and black chevrons marked its tail fins and wingtips.
"From iron cometh strength. From strength cometh will," said Volk,
and watched the words spread in white clouds in front of him. The engines of his strike fighter lit. The air began to sing.
"From will cometh faith."
A servitor began to unplug cables from sockets in the back of his armor. A tech priest in purple and copper robes moved around the strike fighter, oil flicking from its brass fingers. An adept followed in the priest's wake, pulling arming tapers from weapons and closing access panels.
"From faith cometh honor."
Volk stepped towards his craft, moving slowly in his power-starved armor. He pulled himself up into the cockpit. The sockets in the back of his armor connected to the fighter's systems.
"From honor cometh iron."
The strike fighter woke fully. Volk felt the nerve connection tingle up the sockets in his spine. Muscles and bones ached as the sensation of iron and weapons blended with flesh. He breathed out as he felt the engine power surge down his back and the armed weapons prickle his fingers. It felt like becoming whole. The strike fighter had a number. That was the way amongst the Fourth Legion. Other legions daubed their aircraft with names, like fools hanging bells from their ears. The Iron Warriors did not, and though the Lightning Crow had been Volk's for 4 decades of war, its only honour was to bear the number after its unit designation, 78611. The first craft of the first squadron of the 786th Grand Flight. What remained of it, at least.
This is the unbreakable litany, and may it forever be so.
Volk unfastened the helmet from his thigh and clamped it on his head. The canopy began to hinge closed above. Yellow light started to blink through the hangar cavern. Alert klaxons warred with the rising chorus of engines. He closed his eyes. The silver augmetic eyeball that had filled his right socket for the last 3 decades unfolded a crude topography of green lines across his sight. He opened his eyes. The green projection and the physical world meshed. Status runes began to flash across his cockpit systems.
All flight units, he said, keying his vox. Flight readiness complete. On the count, brothers.
Numerals cycled down at the edge of his vision. The metal cavern wall began to slide down into the floor as the outer blast doors opened. Pulses of red light flared in the dark opening beyond as the light of battle beckoned. Snow and ash billowed in. Volk fed power to his craft's thrusters. 78611 rose from the cavern floor. It rocked in the gusting wind. Volk compensated without needing to think. Across the cavern, 64 other war machines began to lift from their stations. Trios of Xiphon interceptors, fire raptors, and lightning crows, all of them liveried in bare steel. It was still enough to be called a grand flight. Just enough. All of them would go into the air light by half of the payload required for the mission. Their ammo hoppers were almost empty, their las cannon capacitors barely charged, their fuel at the lowest margin possible for mission completion. Less than a decade before, going to war like this would have been unthinkable. Not now, though. Now they were warriors starving for the means to make war.
78612 standing by, said the voice of Zarak over the vox.
Volk keyed a nonverbal acknowledgement to his wingman.
A little grim tonight, brother.
The metallic rasp of Zarak's ruined voice could not hide the goading amusement in the words. Volk ignored it, although he felt his lips twitch into the shadow of a smile.
Mission patterns locked in, said Volk into the vox. Onyx, command. This is flight 786, awaiting clearance.
Static hissed in his ears for a second. The diminishing count was racing down to zero.
Flight 786, you are clear for launch,
came the voice of the officer. The man would be watching the data from Volk's flight and matching it against the myriad other operations around the Onyx Fortress. To that human, the war for Kraid would only ever be numbers and signals shunting across his senses. Volk struggled to feel anything but loathing for such an existence.
Iron within,
said the officer.
Iron without,
replied Volk, and switched to the flight vox.
All weapons live.
Amber weapon runes flashed to green. Shackled power built in 78611's engines. The strike fighter was shaking around him as the thrusters fought to hold it in place. The count hit zero. 78611 shot forwards. Force slammed into Volk. Air gasped from his lungs. The wall of night and swirling snow raced to meet him. And then he was out, rising into the black sky. Behind him, his squadron brothers were flowing from the open cavern mouth, afterburners streaks of blue fire. Alerts began to scream as enemy targeting systems locked onto him. Tracer rounds and explosions boiled the night beyond the canopy. He triggered countermeasures. Flares and Auspex lures scattered in 78611's wake. Volk slammed the strike fighter into a climbing spiral. His wingman followed him, holding in perfect formation. The rest of the grand flight scattered into the air from the hangar mouth, wheeling as fire reached for them. Beneath them, the Onyx mountain range extended away to the sky. Explosions pulsed across the ground, staining the underside of the clouds. Batteries dug into the mountain flanks blazed. Small arms fire sparkled in a sea of light. Kraid was a world on the boundary between the War Master's domain and the vengeful wrath of Ultramar. The warp storms that had for so long split the galaxy had gutted. The screaming tides that had blinded the Ultima Segmentum had dispersed, and with its ebb, the anger of Rebute Gilliman and every scrap of might he could call on had begun to move in the storm's wake. The Shadow Crusade of Lorgar and Angron had wounded them, and the predations of the Night Haunter had bled them. But the Lord of Macragge had endured, and now his sons came in vengeance. Worlds held in the War Master's name had come under attack. Some had fallen, and the loyalty of others had begun to waver. All the while, words and rumours had come from the galactic south, first in whispers, then in scattered reports of retreat and disaster. The warriors of the 13th were coming. Across the path of this rising tide, the iron warriors stood. Worlds were burned, fortified, and reinforced. Traps were laid in the path of the enemy. For every advance they made, the forces of the false emperor paid and paid again. But advance they did. Remnants of Imperial Army conquest echelons, Mechanicum Tagmata, rogue trader households, landless knights, and the shattered remnants of legions thought broken at Istvan V, all fought in the armies marshalled by the Ultramarines. They fought with discipline and a unity of purpose, and that purpose was retribution. Against them, the Lord of Iron stood, unbreaking, never tiring, holding the line, while the War Master opened the path to terror. Kraid was a keystone in that line, a world that controlled a system, and from that system projected power into other systems, without which the enemy could divide and slaughter. It had to hold, and hold it had for 6 months. Volk had been there since Perturabo had planted his banner on Kraid's northern mountains. He had watched as the pressure on the defences grew in the void, on the ground and in the sky. So far, the Ultramarines themselves had not reached Kraid in force. But they would, and then the real fight would begin. Volk was iron in blood and bone. He would fight until there was nothing left for him to fight with, and then still fight on. But sometimes, in the first moments of battle, he wondered if there was victory waiting for them.
"Incoming enemy interceptors!" called Zarek.
Volk slammed the strike fighter into a spin before the Auspex began to shriek the lock warning. Red runes flowed across his display. A stutter of autocannon fire lit up the night.
"Breaking left!"
shouted Zarek. Volk pulled 78611 out of its spiral and flooded power to the engines. Fuel warnings pulsed to amber. He rose, feeling the acceleration punching with bone-breaking force. He did not have the time or fuel for an air duel. In his half-machine sight, he could see that his flight was with him, each craft following its own weaving path as munitions exploded in their wake. The enemy were there too. Pairs of red markers converging from below and above. They would outrun them, though. Volk had seen and run the calculations. His forces would reach their objective. They would succeed.
"What?"
called Zarek across the vox, and then cut out. Volk's Auspex fuzzed. Static squawked. A missile plunged down from the cloud layer above them and struck Volk's wingman. Fire roared out. Volk twitched aside on instinct as a pulse of lasfire burned through the space where he had been. A shape was falling from the dark clouds about him. The night had stolen the colours from its wings, but even in the split-second glimpse he caught, Volk recognised it. It was a Ziphon pattern interceptor, kin to those that flew under his command. It was a predator of the skies, designed to kill its own kind. And it was not a machine that could be flown by human hands. Volk
rolled. Lascannon bolts kissed the air he passed through. Warning alarms were screaming in his ears. The Vox was a static ruined squall of signals as the rest of the flight met the enemy descending on them. Volk blinked the automatic targeting system off as he kept rolling. The enemy interceptor was plunging down at him like a dagger, its las cannons turning the night to strobing day. Volk triggered a burst from his thrusters. His roll stopped dead. The manual targeting rune centered on the interceptor for an instant. He touched the fire stud. A single pulse of white brilliance glanced out from his wings. It was a shot that no mortal could have made, and few amongst the legions would ever have attempted. It struck the enemy interceptor's tail and vaporized it. Volk had two heartbeats to watch the burning craft tumble past him. In those brief moments, while half of his awareness was marking the position of the rest of his flight and their opponents, he saw the colors of his enemy lit by the fires of its death. Blue. Sapphire blue. The colour of the sea under the sun at noon, and on its wings the symbol of Ultramar painted in stark white.
So they are here, thought Volk.
He keyed the Vox.
Annex Command, this is 78611. Priority alert to all command echelon.
His hands moved, and the fighter banked and cut down through the night towards where his brothers spun above the battle-lit land.
Go ahead, 78611.
Said a voice that was too deep to be human.
Forces of the 13th are in the battle space, he said.
Beneath him he saw a flash of white fire. A green marker blinked out on the flight status display.
The Ultramarines are here,